7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Hello, monkeys. Monkey Dan here. Just wanted to give a little intro before we dive into this show. So basically what I was doing for this episode was I'd been going through notes on, I'm trying to distill down these principles of the monkey mindset. So this monkey mindset, it's something that David, the monkey co-founder, and I, we keep talking about, and I've been talking about it with other monkeys as well, but I really think that's, it's this distillation of what we really are all about. So it's combining this wildness and this attitude into the monkey mindset. It's kind of that synergy. So basically what I'm going to do on this episode is I'm going through my notes. I had 21 points, concepts that I've been thinking about, and just would love to hear what you guys think, something that stood out more than others, something that really resonated with you, so we can distill these down even more and get the monkey mindset kind of this manifesto that we can just always point back to. It's kind of be this true north. So thanks for tuning in. Would love to hear your comments and enjoy the show. Hello, monkeys, and welcome to the Live Wild or Die podcast. I'm your host, Monkey Dan. And on this week's episode, I wanted to take a deeper dive into the monkey mindset. And I've spent a lot of time recently, I'm just trying to distill these principles of the monkey mindset, what it is, and be able to communicate these ideas much more clearly and just have a deeper conversation with the monkey family and the monkey community. So I've got my notebook here, and I've actually written out 21. It was just kind of a free-for-all brainstorm I had, and I wrote out these 21 different, I guess, concepts that I think this will get distilled down even further into these pillars, these main principles of the monkey mindset. And, you know, it's so funny. It's just, it's one of those things that when I think of something or I see something or I read something, I can go, yes, that is what I'm talking about. That is the monkey mindset. But again, if I had to articulate it very clearly in a sentence or two, I'm struggling. So part of this exercise is hopefully I can get some feedback from you guys and we can make this a collaborative process. So I'm just going to go down the list and I'll maybe explain each one a little bit more if it needs it, and we can go from there. So the first thing I have written down, and before I start, these are not in any specific order as far as importance, anything like that. I just, again, this was kind of a free-for-all brainstorm. So principle number one I wrote down is an attitude of can do. And I think I chose this because I recognize this in myself a lot, especially on things that I'm interested in, things I want to do. I'm going to find a way to make them happen. And maybe that's just, it's a mindset thing that is innate or something you can develop, but I know that if there's something, again, I'm really interested in or passionate about, if there's a roadblock or some sort of obstacle in the way to achieving that or training for that particular goal, whatever it may be, I've noticed that over the years I'm able to circumnavigate these obstacles and always find a way forward, even if I've failed a few times along the way. So that can-do attitude, I think, is definitely high up on the list for being a principle of the monkey mindset, and it happens to be the first one we discuss. Number two, make movement a priority. And I noticed, well, the modern world definitely makes movement challenging, especially outside of, you know, the traditional movement practices as far as going to the gym, running on the treadmill, using weight machines. I don't think actually traditional is the right word for that. Probably the better word would be the mass market main mode of movement is, you know, like a 24-hour, just that big box gym where everything is a machine, more or less. There's free weights as well, but it's kind of has, it's this special place you have to go. And other than that 30 minutes or an hour, however long you happen to be there, you pretty much are quite sedentary. And I know when I'm like traveling at the airport, it's seeing these huge lines of folks going up escalators when there's stairs. It's, you know, it's like two flights. It's not a big deal. But I think it's just all those little opportunities for movement. They aggregate throughout the day and ultimately a lifetime to either benefit or degrade one's health. So I think if you can just shift your mindset into making movement a priority, and it might make certain things inconvenient or uncomfortable, but again, if you can make it a priority, then you don't necessarily have to go to this special place for an hour. It's just a natural part of your life. And point number three, I think, fits right into this. So point number three is create an environment conducive to movement. And so at the old, well, it's actually still the Monkey HQ. I've got a Pocket Monkey set up and an IsoCore set up about 15 feet from my desk. I stand at my desk. And I've also, if I'm doing anything, I'm typically doing our social media stuff. So if I'm doing an Instagram post or responding to a message, I'll drop down into a squat or maybe do some lunges. If I'm on a call, I'll head out the front door, walk around this little business park I'm in. And actually, my David, who's the Monkey co-founder, we've done calls where we both will go out on a run. So I'm out in the semi-wild here in Colorado. There's great trails in the Front Range. I'll go out for a run or a hike. I'm able to do this, you know, more creative, brainstormy call with David and not have to be, you know, sitting inside. And at home, it's the same thing. So I've got a Pocket Monkey set up on the door right when I come down the stairs in the morning. It's super easy to grab it, do a few reps. I've got different kettlebells and dumbbells laying around. We have a mat that I pretty much leave out in the living room. It's just really easy throughout the day to do all these little micro workout sessions, and I don't have to change clothes, anything like that, which that's a great segue into note number four here, which is dress in a way that allows you to move more. And I'm fortunate, I know I'm in a fortunate position where I don't have to dress up necessarily for my job. Typically, I wear kind of an athleisure-esque outfit, joggers, shorts, and a Monkey t-shirt. And I always wear athletic shoes. So it's super easy to, you know, whether I'm going to the store after work, I can run the 200 yards from where I park to the front door. It's super easy during the day to just go out for a quick half mile jog, just to kind of clear my head, get my heart rate up a little bit. I can, again, doing those little micro workouts throughout the day. It's so much easier if you have pants that you can squat below parallel in, or a shirt that allows you to raise your hands overhead. So I know it's not easy for everyone, but if you can just, I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head, but any way you can think of to dress in a way or wear footwear, anything that allows you to just move more, at least be less of a barrier to movement. Okay, no, point number five. So it's exercise/training is built on top of necessary movement. All right, so this I think needs a little more explanation. So the necessary movement is kind of like this baseline level of activity that you need throughout the day to build upon any more advanced training. So that some examples of that would be like the 10,000 step rule. So if you use a step counter, 10,000 steps a day, I think that typically equates to around 5 miles of walking. You'd have to check me on that one. But I know that's kind of a standard baseline for a lot of folks, 10,000 steps. And one thing I've been doing is I actually started using a step counter, which is actually quite effective. But beyond that, it's just trying to be consistent with different exercises every day. So I try and do at least 30 pull-ups every day and about 45 bodyweight dips. And again, for me, that's a relatively, that's well below my threshold, or that's well below, I guess, my max or anything like that. So it's relatively easy, but I can do that every day, and that volume is accumulating up. And again, typically every morning I wake up and do squats, lunges, push-ups. I do rows on Pocket Monkey, some core work on Pocket Monkey, maybe some yoga-esque. I do kind of like this monkey yoga-esque 10, 20-minute flow. Just, I guess it's kind of like a sun salutation for any folks that are familiar with yoga out there. But again, it's this just baseline movement. Anytime I'm just kind of have a blah moment and need a break, I'll go do a handful of push-ups, squats, lunges. It's just being able to fill these little gaps, I guess, between transitions that, again, it aggregates to quite a bit of movement. But that point is, point number five, again, the exercise and training element, which is, that's more like you're sweating, you're breathing hard, your muscles are burning. Think of like one of the workouts in the adventure category. That's adventure category of the Monkey app. Those are a little more high octane. They're going to jack you up a little bit more. But my point is to do those well and to get, I think, the most benefit from those focused, more high intensity training sessions, you need to be building that upon this foundational baseline of movement. So hopefully that makes sense. Point number six. So movement practice is greater than working out. So I think what I was thinking when I wrote that was, it's pretty easy for someone to just kind of, I'm going to work out. I need to work out. I haven't worked out in a while. I ate crappy food this morning, last night, whatever. I need to work out. So you can kind of punch yourself in the gut for an hour, end up in a sweaty mess on the ground, and you feel like you accomplished something, which you did. You worked hard. But what is that session? What's the point of that session, or what is that really achieving? Whereas I think a movement practice is more of this, it's part of a bigger picture, and it's part of getting better. So when I think of this workout session, at least in my notes, how I'm thinking about it is this single workout session where you're just going as hard as you can, and it might not even be about physical improvement. It could be punishing yourself even for making poor health decisions. Versus a movement practice, you're getting better, you're getting stronger, you're getting faster, you're improving your aerobic capacity. I think that's really what I'm trying to say with that point. So we'll move on. Point number seven, spend as much time outside as possible. And man, I used to work outside basically all summer long. So I was a wilderness ranger for 3 seasons. I was a wildland firefighter for 2 seasons. Every day you're outside, majority of the day. And then, you know, I was living in these beautiful areas. So even after work, I pretty much was doing the same thing, hiking, running, going out on the lake, climbing, whatever it was. So I was outside a ton. Now I do a lot more computer work, and I don't spend as much time outside. And I think it definitely, I'm certainly not depressed, but it certainly doesn't, I feel, I guess, less connected to the natural world and the natural world. Let me work on my pronunciation there. I feel less connected to the natural world, and there's something about just that in the fluorescent light all day. I feel this funk. So spending as much time outside as possible, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. There's tons of science and studies that have come out about the benefits of being outside for just stress and depression and all these different things. So get out there. Doesn't matter. You don't have to, you know, go to a national park every day, but even just going for a walk around the neighborhood, going to a local park, anything just to get outside, some natural sunlight, fresh air. There's so much good that comes from that. So point number eight, expose yourself to discomfort regularly. So, you know, honestly, what inspired me to write this is this emergence of kind of this, the Wim Hof method and the ice baths and all that. But it's something that, you know, I've been doing for quite a while. I remember in, you know, all through high school, I went to a high school where sports were pretty, it was a pretty competitive, pretty intense sports school. But we would do ice bath before games. This was in like 2002, 2003, 2004. But, you know, I think what I personally really got from it was it's this mental hardening and this mental toughness. And then, you know, extrapolating that out over the years, it could be climbing a peak, could be or hiking a peak, really, climbing a big wall, going on a long bike ride, it could be traveling, anything that is difficult or challenging where you have to be creative, problem solve, or just be able to keep putting one foot in front of the other for an extended period of time. I think that's really good for you psychologically and as well physically. I mean, you know, I think there's a real reason why the ice baths are getting so popular. It feels good. You get this adrenaline, you get this adrenaline rush. There's this, again, that body hardening, mental toughness element to it. And it's something, you know, I think, you know, we're here in Colorado. It's pretty nice weather, all things being said. It's a heck of a lot nicer than like Minnesota, where my wife's from. But even when it's super cold, I try and I pretty much run. I like to go on trail runs in the winter here. I'm training for a big run. It's the Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim. You run across the Grand Canyon twice in a day. It's awesome. But so I've been training for that a lot this winter. And basically, I rain, shine, snow, sleet, I'm out running. And it's not necessarily enjoyable like it is when it's sunny and 70, but you feel really, really freaking good afterwards. And I think there's that kind of yin-yang peak-valley effect that exposing yourself to discomfort is, or why exposing yourself to discomfort is important. So something to think about. Okay, number nine, principle number nine, note number nine. So eat real food and experiment to see what works for your physiology and goals. So I when I was writing this, I almost stopped at physiology, but then I added goals. And I think that's important because what is ideal for your physiology may also not be ideal for your goals. Or another way to think about it is you might need to enhance what's ideal for your physiology to achieve your goals. So maybe that's losing weight. Maybe that's running an ultramarathon. Maybe it's squatting a bunch of weight, or maybe it's just you just want to be in general health. So again, you need to really identify your why. And then with food, there's no magic bullet. There's no perfect diet. Go to the diet section at a bookstore, Barnes & Noble, look at Amazon. There's so many different things out there. And there's not to say that all of them are bad or any of them are bad. It's just there's no magic bullet that's this cure-all for everyone. So I really, truly believe that nutrition is a personal experiment. And again, I think there's some templates you can work off of, and our kind of monthly template is just eat real food and then experiment, whittle things down from there. But again, if your goals are, you know, these bigger athletic feats, I think you're going to need to fuel differently than if you just want to be generally healthy. So something to think about there. Number 10, take personal responsibility for your health. So I went to school I was planning to go to medical school. So I was basically on this pre-med track. My degree is human science. It was basically very human biology focused. But what I think reflecting back is pretty much 99%, but definitely above 90% of the stuff that we learned was more disease treatment than it was health promotion and or disease prevention. So I think Western medicine is very good. I think it's especially good at treating disease. Where I think Western medicine is a little less than well, I think where they're weak, to be honest, or where Western medicine is meek, is in health promotion, disease prevention. And there's a bunch of reasons for that that I don't have good answers for off the top of my head right now. But I think just knowing that conceptually, I think that can empower you as an individual to start to just take responsibility for your health. There's tons of information out there at the tip of your fingers, literally with smartphones now, but there's so much information out there, whether it's the latest studies on nutrition, latest studies on health and exercise, there's all these different things. There's all these kind of alternative, they're still called alternative, but hopefully they'll become mainstream a little bit more. But there's these great thinkers out there that, you know, they, not to say that 100% of their ideas are awesome and perfect and totally correct, but they're definitely thinking differently and at least questioning some current practices. So I think if you're able to think outside the box a little bit, do some research on your own and educate yourself, you can really take a lot of your health into your own hands and just not be reliant on the system, quote unquote. So I know we're looking at healthcare right now, and it's crazy. I just can't believe how much the cost of healthcare has gone up. And gosh, the last, since I graduated college, so this is like the last decade, it's just crazy. So I think the best thing to do is not need it. So take responsibility, take care of yourself, prevent disease, promote health. Okay. Point number 11. I have simple works / stick to the basics. And then underneath that, I've got just five things. So squat, lunge, push, pull, and plank. And I think especially in the fitness industry, there's always this kind of pressure to release a new program or new product, a new concept, a new whatever, where, you know, I think the folks that are the most successful in their fitness, they stick to the basics. So off the top of my head, specifically thinking about our products, Monkey Bars, Pocket Monkey, the best exercises, or what those really allow for, are these extrapolations and different varieties of squats, lunges, all kinds of different exercises, or exercise variations of pushes, tons of different ways to pull, and then tons of different ways to plank. And I think if you stick to those basics and don't worry about getting too fancy, I think that's really going to be the secret to long-term success versus jumping around from fad to fad or the latest and greatest. So stick to the basics. Don't overthink it. Okay, point number 12. Dang, this is... We're over halfway now. So point number 12, be prepared to, I said, practice or move. Well, it's really be prepared to practice / move and train in any environment. So thinking about that, just, I don't know why this always comes back to me, but when I was in college, I remember we went up to my grandma's house. It's up in Northern California. It's on a river. It's beautiful. And I was trying to stay in shape still for, I had my college strength conditioning program. She doesn't have a squat rack and all that in her garage up there, unfortunately. But I got creative. So I remember doing pull-ups on these redwood trees. They have great branches for that, by the way. And squatting rocks, going for runs, all these things. And then taking that out into the wilderness, I basically built this all natural wild gym when I was a wilderness ranger. And so I think that be prepared is twofold. One, it's being prepared from a mindset standpoint. And two, it could be prepared for an equipment standpoint. So my wife and I, this would have been 2 summers ago. We were on the road for like 8 weeks. And during those 8 weeks, I basically trained 100% with Monkey Bars and used a few other things, used some logs, use some rocks, but, you know, simple things like Pocket Monkey or Monkey Bars, great things to have to allow you to be prepared to train in any environment. Okay, so Point number 13, allow your body to adapt to training slash exercise. So I got to give credit where credit's due. So I was listening to Kelly Starrett. He's kind of this he's a doctor of physical therapy, this mobility guru, really. Super smart guy. If you haven't checked him out, definitely look him up, especially if you have any sort of injuries or mobility, flexibility issues. Tons of content out there. I think he filmed a video every day for like a year. So check him out. But he brought up the concept of, he compared adaptation to recovery. And I think adaptation is a word I really want to adopt to be my own. But point number 13 is allow your body to adapt to training and exercise. So we've got this baseline of movement activity we're talking about, right? And then training, exercise is built on top of that. To adapt to that training and exercise, you need to allow your body to do that. So that could be done a few ways. One, eating properly. Two, I think sleep is a huge one. And when I heard him talk about this adaptation, I was thinking back to college where, you know, as a college athlete, we were training, gosh, probably 20 to 30 hours a week. And that's between stuff on the field, stuff in the weight room, time in the training room afterwards, stretching out, rolling, all these things. So it was a ton of time. And then on top of that, you're stressed from school, you're not sleeping well. So all that, I think, I remember just, you know, about 2/3 through the season, I felt like I couldn't get into like fifth gear. I just felt stuck. And I think a lot of that was probably, I don't know if overtraining is the right word, but it was under adaptation. Or under recovering even. So think about how you can set yourself up so you allow yourself to adapt to that training and exercise. When you're going hard, you're breathing hard, things are burning, how are you going to get better from that, right? You need to adapt to it. Okay, point number 14, join or create a tribe. And this is something that I think for a long time I thought of myself as kind of this lone wolf-esque mindset, or having this lone wolf-esque mindset. And, you know, when you're a wilderness ranger, you work alone a lot. Not necessarily the whole time, but I spent significant amounts of time working alone in the wilderness. It was a very isolated job. And I was doing this in my 20s. And reflecting back, it's, again, it was awesome, but you know, at the same time, it's like, I really think I missed out on time with friends and family and all that. So, you know, now I have a wife, we have a child, and I work alone most days. So I've been trying to make a better effort to meet up with friends regularly, carve out that time to have that community, have that tribe. And it's, I know 100%, I always feel better after, whether it's meeting up with buddies to go for a run, go climbing, work out, whatever it is. I always feel better after that. And I know there's real benefits to that. So join one, or if you can't find one, create one of your own and let us know if you need help. That's, that is something, you know, we've been talking about on our side as, you know, monkey elders, leaders of the monkey society. How can we help foster this family, this tribe of monkeys? Okay, point number 15, maintain a source of inspiration and motivation. So I've actually overdone that a lot, I think, in the sense of, so I think inspiration and motivation is a little different. So inspiration doesn't necessarily get you out the front door, but it gets you thinking about it. Motivation is what actually gets you out there doing whatever it is you were inspired to do. So for me, that's, you know, it's looking at the last few years, I've been interested more in big climbs or these kind of endurance challenges, whether it's riding a bike and climbing a peak or doing a long hike. It's that reading people's stories of how they did, or just reading these awesome endurance stories. In general, there's a podcast I listen to quite often. It's called the Adventure Sports Podcast. It's basically all these awesome people that have done all these crazy adventures. Check it out. It'll get you psyched to do something wild. But I think that inspiration leads to finding the motivation to then get out the door. But I think the two are a little, they're definitely two separate categories. So you need both. Something to get you psyched and then something to actually get you out the door. Because I know for sure there's times where I've been psyched out of my mind, but I'm still scrolling through photos on Instagram or reading some guy's blog. So get excited, but make sure you actually get out there and do it. Okay. Point number 16, focus on skilled movement. And I think this relates back to point number 6, which is movement practice is greater than working out. So again, point 16 is focus on skilled movement. So when I was writing this, what I was thinking of is I definitely remember coaching people that if they weren't in this sweaty mess piled on the floor after the workout, they didn't feel like they'd gotten their money's worth, or they didn't feel like, I don't know, they'd punished themselves enough, or I don't know what exactly the reasoning was. But I noticed also most of the people that did that, their movement patterns were less than ideal. So they were just going as hard as they can go just to go hard versus moving well. So go hard when it's appropriate to go hard, but make sure you have good movement patterns. You're working, you're improving your skill as much as you are improving your work capacity, right? So it's one thing to, like burpees, for example, are a little bit higher skill, especially, well, that's not true. Let's use something better. Pull-ups. Pull-ups are a higher skill, or dips even, higher skill exercise. You can make both of those exercises look super smooth and sexy, or you can make them look basically like garbage. So learn how to scale things. And again, I'm not saying don't go hard. I don't want to give off the impression that I'm against this intense exercise at all. All I'm saying is there's a time and a place for it, but you should do it well if and when you are going to do it. So we'll move on. Point number 17 is intensity comes in many forms. So intensity could be doing 50 push-ups as hard and fast as you can. That's quite intense. Intensity could be doing 100 lateral jumps as fast as you can. Intensity could also be picking up the heaviest log or boulder you could find on the beach that day. It could be squatting as much weight as you can once. So it's not, intensity does not equate to volume necessarily, right? I think a lot of folks, I know I'm guilty of this myself, I felt like I could only achieve intensity if I was doing a lot of reps or a lot of volume, versus you can do, like, Olympic weightlifting is a great example. You can do something super intense, but it only lasts for like less than a second. So something to think about. Intensity comes in many forms. It doesn't always have to be high volume. So think about how you can do intense sessions that don't necessarily exhaust you. Okay. So point number 18, include as much variety as possible. And I have a sub note, which is move through as many different planes as possible. So in the exercise science, strength condition world, there's three main planes of movement we talk about. So there's frontal, transverse, and sagittal plane. So frontal plane, think moving like side to side. Transverse plane, think about moving forward and back. Sagittal, think about rotation. Okay. So most of the stuff we do is typically frontal and transverse. So it's very linear, north, south, east, west. What we don't do a lot of is work in the sagittal plane. And, you know, growing up, sports I played were hockey and lacrosse. So a ton of rotational strength and power needed, right? You're shooting, defending, whatever it is. You needed to work in that sagittal plane. Over post school, after school, I wasn't doing as much of that. Now I do it a lot more. Especially, I've been using the IsoCore a ton. That's been kind of part of my new baseline routine. And that rotational stuff, I notice it in my back, especially my lower back, my thoracic spine. It's just, there's like a loosening or a lubricating I notice doing these twisting actions. And they're not super intense. They're very slow and controlled, but it really does feel good. So maybe a better point for 18 is, make sure to treat each movement plane equally and don't get stuck into one or two. Make sure you're hitting all three. All right, we've got three more. It's a long one. Okay. Number 19 is create a life centered around movement. So, you know, honestly, reading this now, I think that point's kind of mentioned down below. So making movement a priority is number two. Number three is create an environment conducive to movement. But again, 19 is create a life centered around movement. And I remember I was going to say versus making movement fit into your life. So making movement the priority. So I've kind of take pride, and over the years, there's definitely been times where I could have skipped workouts or skipped going on a hike just because I was tired, or there's life got in the way. Not to necessarily say it was always the healthiest thing, but I've always had a good discipline to be able to get myself to move, train, exercise. So I think if you can, again, it's all about shifting the mindset a little bit to just making that more of a priority, but also making it the barrier to entry a little bit easier. So keep that one short. We kind of talked about that a lot already. Two more. Okay. Number 20. Some movement is always better than no movement. And I remember I just said how disciplined I was, so I'm going to totally contradict myself right here. But I remember if I couldn't do the entire workout, if I knew I didn't have time, I wouldn't do anything, which is so weird looking back. But, you know, doing 10 squats in the morning or 10 rows or 10 pushups or whatever it is, that's infinitely better than doing nothing. And it does, again, it aggregates. If you just did 10 reps every day for a week, that's 70 reps versus zero. So, excuse me. Something is always better than nothing. If you can take the stairs instead of the escalator, if you can do, you know, if you can only do maybe like a micro workout or a life hacker workout or just a short workout from, let's say, the Monkey app, that's always going to be better than doing nothing. And again, it's going to aggregate and accumulate over time. So shift your mindset. Last one, point number 21. I have take time away from tech/screen. So I should say, I could say that a lot better, but minimize time using tech and or screens. And I'm just as guilty, if not more guilty, as everyone else. So it's something I've been working on. I've tried using, the iPhone has kind of this built-in social media timer. And honestly, for me, it's, you know, Instagram specifically has become kind of more of a job. So I do way less just recreational scrolling, let's call it. But I still spend a ton of time on my phone or on a computer. So I don't have a great answer for how to minimize that. But I think just being conscious of it. And if you find yourself just bored going to scrolling or looking at the same website or looking at your Facebook for the, you know, 10th time and the last 10 minutes, you know, maybe it's keep a book around. Maybe it's do 5 pushups. Maybe it's go grab the IsoCore. Maybe it's text your friend. Although that doesn't help with the tech and screen time. But again, I think just as I'm talking out loud about it now, having a better option close and ready versus, you know, it's so easy to just kill time scrolling through Instagram or whatever. So something to think about. It's challenging, but I do think at least being conscious of it and incrementally figuring out how you can, you don't need to totally eliminate it, but you can maybe get more efficient at your time you do spend on the tech and screens, and so then you have more time to go outside and be wild. So that was a journey, monkeys. And again, these are just notes, so I'd love to hear certain ones that stood out more than others. And we'll just keep the conversation going. So this, I believe, is our 9th Live Wild or Die podcast. I really enjoy the podcasting. So for those of you listening, thank you so much. As always, feel free to shoot us questions, info@monkey.co. And if you are enjoying the show, I'd really appreciate it. I would do an exceptionally wild workout in your honor if you could leave a review on iTunes. Just if you're enjoying the show, please let the world know. No need to hide it. And if you listen on YouTube, feel free to leave comments, questions, all that. Until next time, everyone, get out there, be wild, and monkey on. Thank you.